preaching for 45 minutes. You think I'm joking, don't you? A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that the boat was already being swamped. Jesus was asleep in the stern. The disciples woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And Jesus rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." There is a saying in the country of my birth that wherever you live in England, you are never more than 2 hours away from the sea. I don't know if this is literally true, but it is true that if you drive east or west, it won't take you long before you reach the North Sea or the Irish Sea or some major estuary that flows into one or the other. My homeland is an island, and the sea is very much in our blood. I grew up in a port city on the north bank of the Humber Estuary, and thank you, Patrick, for choosing the hymn that we have just sung, because you may not be aware that John Backus Dykes, the composer of the music for the hymn you have just sung, comes from my hometown. John Backus Dykes, a disgruntled cleric who was never made bishop, much to his annoyance, but as a revenge wrote some wonderful church music which actually runs all the way through our hymnal. You'll find a lot of John Backus Dykes. What a wonderful name that is. You know, Backus Dykes. I don't even know that we've got a monument to John Backus Dykes. We've got a monument to William Wilberforce. He came from my hometown as well, you know. We have a lot of notables. Even those who went to prison come from my hometown. In fact, the famous saying, "From Hull, Helen, Halifax, may the good Lord preserve us." The reason being that felons would be tried in Hull, and if convicted, hanged in Halifax. And so, from Hull, Helen, Halifax, may the good Lord preserve us. But when I think of John Backus Dykes, my hometown, it fits right in to our service and our lessons today. Always in Hull there was this smell of the sea, the North Sea, just 5 to 10 miles to the east of where I grew up. As a boy, during the summer holidays, my family would spend a week in a small bungalow on the coast. The bungalow has long since disappeared, fallen into the sea through coastal erosion. There are even old maps of the area that show a village long since lost to the sea. And on stormy days, I remember you could stand on the cliff top and you could hear the tolling of the church bell as it swung beneath the waves. A constant reminder of the power of nature. The River Humber, which forms a natural boundary between the counties of Yorkshire on the north bank and Lincolnshire on the south. When I was a boy, the quickest way to cross from one side to the other was by paddle steamer. You can still see those paddle steamers. There's one towed alongside the Thames in London. It is now a restaurant. The Tattershall Castle, I think it is. Those of you who've been to London may look for it. You may step on it and say, "There the Holy Father stood." In good conditions, the ferry crossing would take about 30 minutes. The crossing from Hull to Lincolnshire at that point is only about a mile and a half wide. The estuary widens to about 8 miles as you get closer to the coast. But I remember as a small boy, the crossing could take hours. Particularly one night, I remember, when there was a dreadful storm. It took about 2 hours for the boat to tie up alongside before we could get on it. And then several hours for us to cross the mile and a half wide estuary to the other side. I remember being very frightened. I imagine that John Backus Dykes would have known what the Humber was like. He would have grown up alongside it. He would have had the smell of the sea in his nostrils. And I wonder whether the Humber was in his mind when he wrote that wonderful thing, hymn, Eternal Father, Strong to Save, whose arm hath bound the restless wave. Wind and sea and the storms of life are themes that run through our lessons for this Sunday. In the lesson from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus and his disciples are crossing the Sea of Galilee when a storm arises, and the disciples fear for their lives. They wake Jesus, who apparently is asleep in the stern of the boat, and Jesus seems unconcerned. When the disciples ask him if he really does care that they might be sinking, Jesus speaks to the wind and the sea as if he were speaking to you or me. Peace, be still, and all becomes calm. And then, acknowledging their fear, Jesus turns his attention to the disciples. No calming words for them. No, it's all right, don't worry about it. No, it's okay, everything's going to be fine. He simply says, so where's your faith? Where's your faith? He rebukes them in the same way he rebukes the wind and the waves. Well, of course, on the face of it, this is really a story which describes Jesus' divine power to control the forces of nature. The Gospels themselves are really attempts by the faithful in the times of the Gospels to try and make sense who this person Jesus is. And this is a wonderful illustration of how Mark, the Gospel writer, tries to describe the divine power of Jesus, who has the power over nature itself. But long before the Gospels became what we know as the New Testament, the Gospel writers wrote to meet a need in their own community of faith. And in the case of the Gospel of Mark, we think we can identify what those needs might have been. It seems that the community of Mark had just gone through a major crisis. One suggestion, really from the dating of the Gospel itself, is that this was a crisis initiated by the Roman Emperor Nero. We do know, as a matter of history, that the Emperor Nero persecuted the Christians around the year 65, 66. And this tradition has it that the Gospel of Mark was written in Rome for the Roman Christians. So it may be that they were responding, the Gospel responding to the fear that the Christians had over their lack of faith. Why did this crisis happen? Another equally compelling suggestion is that actually the community was living in or around Jerusalem during the time of what is known as the Jewish Wars. The Jewish Wars took place between 66 AD and 72 AD. It's when Masada eventually fell. It's when the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. And there is this sense that maybe the Christians found themselves caught in the fight between the Jewish tradition and the Romans. And somehow in there they were trying to make sense of their faith. Either way, whatever the crisis, it seems that the Christians of Mark's community were asking an age-old question. The question I feel sure we've all asked at one time or another. Why do these storms of life rise up and trouble us? This is the question that the Old Testament lesson addresses from the book of Job. Actually, one of the parishioners at the 8 o'clock told me that he's working his way through the Bible for the second time, and he's just hit the book of Job. You know, I love the book of Job. I think it's a wonderful book, well worth a read. Job is a faithful man of God, yet seemingly, for no reason that he can work out, tragedy strikes. He loses everything. His family, his land, his livelihood, his health. Trying to console him in his loss, Job's friends suggest that perhaps he has wronged God in some way. There's a nice little pastoral lesson for you if you ever go and visit a friend in hospital. You know, well, you must have done something wrong that you're lying here, you know. And by other such words, we comfort our souls, don't we? But Job will have none of it. And he does something we're always a bit nervous about. He challenges God. He challenges God and says, so explain yourself. Explain yourself. Why is this happening? And God, being God, completely skips over the question. Completely ignores it. What he does is he rounds on Job and he says, all right, I'll tell you. Where were you when I created everything? Where were you when I breathed over the waters of creation? Were you there when I separated the skies from the ground? Were you there when I formed human beings? Were you there? Could you tell me what it seemed like? That's what we call a holy slap in the face. And Job is silent. He has no answer. Because the point that God was making is there is no human criteria by which to judge God's ways. If we believe that God is who God is, then there is no way we can work out his ways or her ways. Read the Bible. Read the Bible. It runs right through it. My ways are not your ways, says the Lord. It's a sobering lesson that maybe Mark had Job in mind when he addressed the fears of his community. Perhaps he had the words of Psalm 107, which we recited earlier this morning, the psalm that tells us about what it's like to live through a storm, the storm of life. Maybe he had that in mind when he told the story of Jesus' stilling of the storm. The English mystic, Julian of Norwich, who flourished around about 1370, she knew an awful lot about human suffering. So much, in fact, that she wrote a series of visions down in a book that's been handed on to us called The Revelation of Divine Love. You will find chapter 22 of the Revelation that she says this: if there be anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe from falling, I know nothing of it. You will find earlier on in Julian's showings that she says, God says, I did not promise that you would have an easy life. I did not promise that. I said you would have life and have it abundantly. And so, speaking out of the well of experience, Julian says, if there be anywhere on earth a lover of God who is always kept safe from falling, I know nothing of it, for it was not shown me. But this was shown, that in falling and in rising again, we are always held close in one love. We are always held close in one love. So it seems to me that you can take the story of Jesus stilling the storm in the Gospel of Mark simply as a story about Jesus and leave it at that. Or you can accept the deeper truth that the story is a parable of our own lives, where on many occasions, such as when I was a small boy crossing the Humber estuary on a stormy night in a rackety old steam ferry, or like Job, who's lost everything in life, or the Christians of Mark's Gospels trying to make sense of how they survive not only in their lives but in their faith with war and persecution all around them. We all have to face the storms of life that spring up, often unbidden and unawares. And it is true. It is at times such as these that our faith is tested and sometimes found wanting. It's at such times, I would suggest, it is helpful to listen to the voices of the past, to listen to the voice of Job, to listen to the voice of the psalmist, to listen to the voice of Julian of Norwich, who each in their time have accepted, although we cannot know the mind of God, we can know the mind of Christ. Because the Gospels tell us. We can know the mind of Christ, who first and foremost on that boat acknowledged the fears of the disciples. There's an old saying, if you name the fear, you're halfway to conquering it. Jesus acknowledges the fear of the disciples. Jesus acknowledges our fears. And then speaks to our troubled hearts. Peace. Be still. Peace. Be still. And know that constantly he holds us in his love. Amen.